Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
All right, Matt, we are here to talk about spam, and we're joined by one of your friends, so I'd like you to introduce our guest, but also, I need to give a quick spoiler alert. I have probably over the last 5 years become such a giant REM fan, like retrospectively, so yeah. I am so ready to just go on every REM-based tangent that we can on this episode, but who is our guest this week?
There's a lot to talk about, and I'm very, very happy we have this guest. An old and dear friend of mine, an amazing singer, musician, visual artist, dancer. I mean, you do it all, don't you? Olive Hui. Did I pronounce your name properly there? Is that okay?
Yes.
It's so good to have you, Olive. Thank you so much. Olive has been listening to the show, and I know by not to blow up your spot right away, but I know that you don't have like a ton of background with Weird Al in general, but I think our show kind of fascinated you about him, and that's what led you here, right? Which makes me so happy.
I know nothing.
I love that. I mean, honestly, for me, one of the things that really inspired me and made me so excited to do this in the first place was the idea of helping other people see what I see in him as an artist and as a incredibly talented singer, musician, performer, but more than anything, this like really uniquely like American artist. So the idea that people are discovering Al through this show blows my mind. So thank you so much for
coming on to talk about him.
Is this two people that we directly know became Al fans because of the podcast? Because I know your keyboard player also, right?
The keyboard player from Wheatus, who was only vaguely aware, Brandon, went listened to our show and was impressed enough that he bought a ticket to see Al on his last tour and had an amazing time. So yeah, all of that just blows my mind. And I can't wait for Al to start sending me my share of the royalties.
Yes.
Well, I am a fan of whatever Matthew does.
Oh.
So when I discovered his podcast, I mean, I obviously know Weird Al, who he is. But the fact that he just does his thing and then it's over. And then who are the people that are analyzing it, putting it together, and talking about every song? So this is genius. I'm so glad to be here. Thanks.
Oh, thank you.
So what made you decide to go with spam?
I was checking with Matthew about, was it a month ago? Where
about
are you guys
that.
At right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I found out which album you're talking about, and there are maybe 3 or 4 songs that you haven't done yet.
Yeah.
And I listened to all of them. When I heard spam, I'm like, oh, this one.
Oh, wait. So
obviously.
So I need to really clarify this. You have not even heard spam until recently. Like, this wasn't like this was one song that kind of like existed in my memory. So this is completely
I'm like
fresh.
Chasing this this train of podcasts. I'm like, where are you guys at? And I hop on it.
Okay.
I was like, this is simple. I understand this.
Yeah. So okay, well then we'll start here then. I already said this early on, but what are all of our independent feelings of the group REM?
Yeah. So I mean, this is a great, I had to double check myself on this because I think we've referenced it before, but this is the first time Al references REM as of this moment 4 times in his career. So Al, he does this direct parody of Stand. He will later do a style parody called Frank's 2000 Inch TV.
And 2 polkas.
And their REM songs appear in 2 different polkas. He does Losing My Religion and he does Bang and Blame. later on. So Al clearly is an enormous R.E.M. fan. I think that is a strong contender for the artist he has referenced the most times in his entire career. I'd have to check the numbers on that, but it's got to be very close.
And
personally, I get it. It's funny, in a previous episode, I referenced that I thought Al had the taste, the music taste of like an indie record store employee, which I used to be. So I'm very in tune with that vibe. And R.E.M. absolutely checks out for that. They are like one of these bands that started really small in this like indie college radio band that very cool, hip music people knew and liked, and then managed to transition into this like big pop success career in this crazy way without really ever fully betraying their roots.
No, or their sound. Also met, it sounds like R.E.M.
Yeah.
They also met at an indie record store.
That's right. That's right. They absolutely did. They absolutely, I love R.E.M. and I totally get why Al likes them so much. Like it makes a lot of sense to me. And at the time this song came out, this was the biggest hit that they had had to date.
And am I wrong in thinking that this is also, it's like this and Shiny Happy People are probably the two biggest hits that they, the band, do not like that much, right? Like
that might be true. I mean, so I, in my little bit of research on this song, stands when it, so there's talking about like some indie record store fun. The album that this song is on is called Green. The R.E.M. record that has this song on it. The fun sort of urban legend is that they named the album Green after all the money that they were going to make. Making these like the most commercially viable songs that they had done to date. Prior to this, the only song they had that was a top 10 hit was The One I Love that was on the record before this. Then the album after this has Losing My Religion, which, of course, was that's the biggest song they've ever made.
Where was It's the End of the World as We Know It? Or did that just not, is that not as big of a hit at the time it came out as it became later?
It's the End of the World as We Know It was on Document, which is also has The One I Love. It was the album prior to this. But again, funny, now you think about it in retrospect, The One I Love, The End of the World as We Know It did not do that well. it peaked at number 69 on the charts.
Okay.
And only really, I think, became a big song for them in hindsight. I think it became a fan favorite and now feels like a hit, even though it actually really kind of wasn't.
I also feel like it was probably one of those situations where R.E.M. I feel like had their biggest career peak in the early 90s during the grunge era. And I'm sure that it was an easy song for MTV to pull the video back out of the archives and start playing on a more regular rotation as well.
That's true. It probably did come back. And I know a lot of their, like their earlier songs, which, you know, fans would know now, like Radio Free Europe or Driver 8 or any of these like early songs of theirs that are now very beloved. But at the time, again, they were an indie band on IRS record. Like they were not doing well.
Yeah.
They were touring, doing this small sort of college radio circuit. And it really was not until, I mean, you can make the argument again, Documents, the album before this, had The One I Love, which did chart very well for them. That was the start of them moving into some serious mainstream radio success. Anyway, that's a long way around to say that I love R.E.M.
Yeah.
I really do.
I will be much more brief and just say, yes, I really like R.E.M. I would say that the time period when they were at their career peak is also my favorite era of R.E.M. I enjoy Murmur and a lot of the early records, but really Document up until, I would say even like the early 2000s, I felt like they could do absolutely no wrong. There's some like truly phenomenal albums. I'm a big defender of Monster, which I think I always see as one of the more lower rated R.E.M. albums critically, but I love that album. So I'm excited. Eventually we're going to talk about Bang and Blame on a polka, and I will absolutely sidetrack us for at least a 5-minute conversation about the album of Monster when we get there.
But please do.
But how about you, Olive? Where are you with R.E.M.?
What I love about them is knowing the origin of how everyone got together and like so-and-so suggested you should like play together and then they're keeping it so small. I think in the beginning they play shows for a couple hundreds people or a thousand people and it was not a thing where the rest of the country know.
Yeah.
And I just get really excited knowing like how the beginning of how band starts.
Yeah.
Of obviously losing my religion is probably what I knew mm-hmm. when I was younger first. I did not know about Green.
Yeah.
That's funny because they hop on a bigger label and they think that
yes.
this is the time to make something green.
Yeah, they were on IRS and then they moved to, I think, Warner Brothers. Yeah, Warner Brothers picked them up. And yeah, you know, as Matt pointed out, it's funny. This is a little bit early, but you could tell because this is 1989. The grunge movement has not fully started yet, but you can tell that the gears are moving in a direction here where like the music world is changing, and REM coming up when they did. Warner Brothers clearly saw it coming.
Yeah,
they signed them in 1989. They knew that this was we were moving in a new direction musically.
I think mm-hmm. it's also, I always give a lot of credit to, well, there's three bands that I feel like somehow survived the grunge when you know, the first opening chords of Smells Like Teen Spirit murdered every other form of rock and roll that was happening.
Yeah.
There's like three bands that somehow not only just held on, but like were as critically successful and commercially successful as ever was obviously REM was already long established, U2, and somehow mm-hmm. Aerosmith. Like it's very baffling by those three, but REM and U2 at least make a little bit more sense because there's so many elements of 80s REM and U2 that you can see as like the breadcrumbs that lead to like a Nirvana and a Pearl Jam. Aerosmith was just total random happenstance. It was like, look, dads also need rock music to listen to during the 90s.
I was going to say as well, it's also very, I don't know if this was calculated or not, it probably is just a coincidence, but the fact that in 1991, REM's big hit is Losing My Religion, which has nothing in common with Nirvana or the grunge scene at all.
But then
it's
you
like
get
they
Monster.
Actually they moved. Well, yeah, but they moved in this direction that actually really worked for them at that time. Like they didn't just sound like another Nirvana band, which a lot of bands that had existed before Nirvana, we can make a whole other podcast talking about this subject matter because it's really interesting. But these bands that predated Nirvana by many years suddenly were accused of being Nirvana ripoffs.
Yeah.
Even though even Kurt Cobain, by his own admission, was like, oh, I borrowed a lot from the Pixies and from Mudhoney and from the Jesus Lizard and all these bands that now suddenly are like, oh, yeah, more bands that sound like Nirvana. Those guys must have been pissed.
Yeah.
But anyway,
I mean, I think a part of it was that a lot of those bands got better record contracts because Kurt Cobain liked them. Like,
that's true.
In no other world were the Butthole Surfers or Daniel Johnston getting a major record label contract.
Yeah, no, he did try to elevate people to the best of his ability, but it's often the case. And, you know, funny, to bring it back to REM, there's a band, I'm not sure if either of you are familiar with or listeners, but there's a band called Big Star.
Yes.
That are this, a band that came up around the same time as REM that...
Big Star.
They folded very early. It's two main songwriters in that band. One of them was Chris Bell and the other was Alex Chilton.
Yeah.
And they basically are one of those tragic stories where they had all of the markers of a band that was going to become enormous and it just did not happen for them and they fell apart. And
there's like three songs everyone probably knows by Big Star without knowing that it's Big Star. 13 has been covered by like every indie band in history. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Their song In the Streets became the That 70s Show theme song.
The theme to That 70s Show, yeah. That's Big Star.
That's right.
Yeah, but Ballad of El Gudo, I think, is the other one that a lot of artists have covered since.
But REM, back in the day, would do shows opening for Big Star. Like, they had a lot in common musically. And everyone at the time, REM said this. There's a documentary about Big Star that's really interesting. But REM themselves said, they were like, there was no world where we thought we would become bigger than them because they were so much better. Like by REM's admission, like they were a better band. And it's just one of those, like, sometimes you can do everything right. And the pieces don't fall in the same way. And it worked out for REM really well, but Big Star unfortunately did not get that lift the way that REM
did. I did not know that their two worlds collided. I'm a huge Big Star fan and a big REM fan, but I never
knew. Big Star and REM had had a lot of, and you can hear it in the music too, right? They definitely had this very similar aesthetic. And Big Star, a band worth checking out if you are listening to this show. Highly recommend.
Well, the last...
Sometimes.
The last thing I want to mention, even though it has nothing to do with 1989 at this point, but obviously... because Matt and I have a very shared sense of humor, you can't listen to the song Stand and not think of the opening credits to the Chris Elliott classic TV series Get a Life. So also just quick shout out to that show. Just watch it. It's a crazy good show.
That is a great show. I was reminded of that doing research for this and I had forgotten all about it. There's also a really, really amazing, like one of the funniest gags in all of the series Parks and Recreation is based on this song where Ben loses his job and decides, he's like, it's fine, I'm gonna just enjoy my hobbies. Oh, and he tries to make a claymation music video to this song, and he only gets like 2 seconds into the song before he runs out of, he can't do it anymore, and it's just absolutely hilarious. Yeah, no, this is a great, and you know what, to bring it back to where we are with Al now, the thing that makes this song so great, and it's what I love that Al parodied it, is that the song Stand is pretty dumb.
Yes.
It's a pretty dumb song that he heard. And I saw a quote by REM's own admission, their guitarist Peter Buck described it as, without a doubt, the stupidest song we've ever written.
I feel like they're very earnest at the time.
I know, yeah. Well, that's the thing about this song is, I'm talking about the REM version, Stand, is that it has this air of like, there's more to this lyric than you realize, like that there's some hidden meaning behind the song. But I do also feel like you look at the lyrics very closely and you're like, I don't know what.
No,
I'm not sure that there is. I don't know what, like, I think that I found another quote here that said, well, first of all, that they were trying to do something that was in the style of 60s pop groups. They wanted to make something that sounded like the Monkees or the Archies.
Which nailed it in that
which
sense.
That, yeah, the vibe of that is really, really great. But there was a quote from Michael Stipe saying it was about, if there was any deeper message, it's about making decisions and actually living your life rather than just letting it happen.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's, I get that. I can see that. But even it's designed to be earwormy, catchy, where you don't actually really have to think about it too much to just enjoy this lyric and melody. You know it. On one listen, you know this song, you know.
But I also want to pull a Yankovic quote real quick, too. Yankovic actually noted that this song was very fun to pick apart and figure out the almost what he referred to as subliminal. Oh, my God. I'm subliminal parts. God damn it. The parts that fade in and out. There's little bell sounds and things that you really never notice on the very first listen. So I read that quote before I went to listen to this, and he's absolutely, there's so much weird, quick things just hidden in the background that he's replicating in his version of the song as well. I mean, the backup, the little like ham and pork, like,
yeah.
The one that I had to laugh at that I noticed that even when I was looking at the lyrics on Genius, they didn't include this, was the one line he says, think of the selection, are there different flavors? The background vocals go, let's see.
Yeah. There's another one too, like, because in the REM version, all those little like vocal tags are there, but I can't make out what they are. In Al's version, you can make them out a little bit better. And one of his is the, you know, the think of expiration, better read the label. And after that, it just goes, oh boy. Like all those little tags that he throws in are great. I think he does the oh boy for a couple of them, but it's like, yeah, that little extra.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
I think it's because it's so simple. Like, to me, the two songs almost mean the same thing.
Yeah, nothing.
When I answer,
they both
when
mean
I answer
nothing.
Matt that this is the song that I'm gonna do, I send Matt a picture of all the spams you can find in the supermarket. And isn't that you making decision for your life?
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. This is all about you can't let life happen to you, right? You got to pick your spam flavor and eat.
The internet loves this line. The tin is there to keep the spam in.
Yeah.
Oh, if you look at a lot of the videos, people comment always that.
It's the back and forth of it. The key is there to open the key is going to open the tin. The tin is there to keep the spam in. And there's another variation of it where he says something about the can.
The tab is there to open the can, and the can is there to hold in the spam.
That is like a Primus lyric.
but again, it mirrors that original one so well. Like it's not the REM version of that is your feet are going to be on the ground, and your head is there to move you around.
Yeah,
like Al is so good at like matching the rhyme structure and the phrasing structure of the original song. It's not just changing the lyrics. He manages to like fit the form so well. And yeah, again, it's like, is his lyric any more meaningful than the one I just read to you from the REM song? I don't really know. No. I like, it's a great example. We had said in a previous episode how I feel like Al doesn't like to, from everything we've seen, he might not love to parody a song that's in already funny. Like, right. If it's a song that has a sense of humor already, it's kind of like, well, maybe don't touch on that. Because how do you, like, it's then, as we've said, like a hat on a hat. Exactly, exactly. So you want to do something that feels very serious and self-important, because then to make fun of it is just all the more satisfying and delightful. This song is borderline self-aware, and it presents these lyrics in a very, very profound way. But I do feel like REM, I mean, based on the quotes I saw as well, I think they also have a sense of humor about that this song is maybe more frivolous than it is designed to sound. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's one line that I don't like in Spam.
In Spam?
There's only one line that doesn't work for me, and it's, now if there's something left, don't throw it out. Use it as spackle. And then there's a long pause, and he says, or bathroom grout. Yeah. And I'm like, that is the only part, that a word that we throw around sometimes with the parodies. That's the only line that felt a little clunky to me in the whole song.
Yeah, I can see that. And, you know, also, it's just an interesting, like, in the world of what Al does, like, we've also said before, like, the parody choice that he would make that is, like, on the obvious side, and arguably this is. It's interesting to think about this, right? Like, I'm realizing my exposure to Spam as a product, without a doubt, this is the first thing that I ever heard in my life about this product.
I'm going to say something to you that I have never said on this show before, but you have said a lot.
Okay. Mm.
I discovered this song on the Food album.
There you go.
I did own the Food album. It was one of the only like Al compilation albums that I had. And obviously, as we've established, the UHF soundtrack was not an easy one to come by.
No, this is a tough record to find. Yeah. Or it was.
So I agree with you that I think I did not know. I think I had to ask my parents, what is Spam? I was so confused by it.
Really?
So it's funny because it's like, obviously, this was a joke already. Like, if you looked into this is one of my favorite types of episode to talk about is this, where there's so many things for me to do research on in advance. Where I'm doing research on the history of REM, the history of Hormel, who made Spam, and Al's connection to all of it. And so Spam goes back a long way to the 30s. I think it was 1937 it came out, and it was, as best I can tell, immediately a joke. To a lot of people, like there was like the head of Hormel at one point said he kept a whole file of hate mail that he got about Spam.
It's not from the vegan at the time.
No, yes, specifically from American GIs in the war, because this was a common war product because it had a long shelf life. So they would ship Spam to the military people on the front in World War II. He said he got just like letter after letter after letter of abuse, to which he said, if they think Spam is terrible, they ought to have eaten the bully beef we had in the war. So of course, every generation likes to say that, you know, shoot down other ones. Anyway, so I had a moment where I was like, this must have already been in pop culture a little bit, but I don't know what other references to Spam as a joke like this existed before Al did his version that clearly must have put it back in people's minds again, you know?
Yeah, and I think that Spam, it's tough for us because, again, we grew up at the same basic time where I am sure that Spam was a regular punchline on some type of Saturday morning cartoon, a la like a Tiny Toon Adventures, an Animaniacs, a Freakazoid.
Freakazoid,
like, those like WB kids cartoon Saturday morning stuff. There's no way that Spam wasn't like a regular punchline.
I guess it was. Going back to another previous episode, we talked about how like everyone thought that hernias were hilarious for a chunk of time. Like, it was just so funny to be injured with a hernia. And that's just obviously no one thinks that anymore. Olive, did you have like, was Spam something you ate?
Yes. So in kindergarten, this is weird. I grew up in Hong Kong. we got into a line to learn how to cook in class in kindergarten, and what we made was rice and spam.
Huh. There you go. I
was 3 or maybe 4 years old.
I had saw that spam, since it came out, has done exceptionally well in Asian countries. And also, it is like one of the most popular meats available in Hawaii.
Yeah, I was about to ask, what is the connection?
I don't know. Oh, I mean, so again, if we're talking about military, obviously during World War II, there was a big U.S. military base in Hawaii, so they probably shipped a lot of it there. To this day, if you go to a McDonald's or Burger King in Hawaii, you can get a burger made of spam. It is
and
often
pineapple.
It is yeah, I don't know. And actually on menus there, apparently you will actually see something referred to as Hawaiian steak. And that is spam.
Whoa. Hashtag Hawaiian
steak. Hawaiian steak. I've never been to Hawaii, but if you go, if you're making a trip this summer, maybe consider looking for a Hawaiian steak on the menu.
I read that there are 2 songs about spam by
Al.
Yeah, but I either didn't find it, couldn't find it. Yeah.
Did you see this, Matt? I do know. No. Did you see this?
No. What's the other one?
So it wasn't a real song. Al will occasionally on live shows do a live show only parody, or like a medley of like quick parodies. And back in this was before this, it was in the 80s. He did a parody of Hall & Oates' Man Eater, and he called it Spam Eater.
Oh, Spam Eater. I did hear about that.
But
actually,
but it was literally just
a live show.
It was just in a live show, and the extent of the parody was I think it was like, oh, here she comes. Oh, she likes that processed meat. She's a spam eater. And then it moved on to the next
thing.
That was the whole parody. So
that's enough.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he couldn't. He was like, yeah, I'm not sure I got a whole song worth of spam references at a man eater. But this one, he certainly does.
Yeah. And he nailed. I really think that this song, this is going to be another one of those ones similar to what we said about Here's Johnny. It's so hard for me to separate how much I just genuinely enjoy the song Spam when it comes on.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. But this is really, this is such a fun, goofy parody that he was able to concoct.
Out of chaos. And it has also resonated with people. You know, we've been talking about, you haven't been privy to this, Olive, but this particular album we've been talking about seems to have not, it didn't really resonate with many people when it came out. It didn't do that well for him.
And the movie.
And the movie also did not do that well.
Did you talk about the movie?
Oh, yeah. It became a classic after the fact. Side note, another funny thing, like, I have to say, weird. I don't think there is a single spam reference in all of the movie.
No.
And talk about another easy thing to throw in.
Yeah, like, he's already eaten the Twinkie wiener.
He's having
sandwiches.
Twinkie wiener sandwiches, but he's not having spam. I don't get it. But anyway, this song really did stick for him and became a favorite. Now, maybe it became a favorite more because it appeared on the Food album, Matt. That's possible that's a compilation that came out later with all of his, you know, food-related parodies. Mm-hmm. So that might have played a part. But if you Google this song compared to everything else that we have talked about on this record, I Google this, and one of the first hits I had was how Weird Al's song Spam nearly killed my brother. So naturally, I clicked on that.
I was going to say, you watched that video, right?
What happened?
And it's a story from a woman in Canada talking about how her brother loved Al so much and heard Spam and just thought it was hilarious and insisted that his mom buy Spam for him because he wanted to try it. She bought him a can of Spam. He made his own sandwich to bring to school, but apparently he microwaved it in the morning, assembled it, but then left it in his locker for like hours and hours and hours before he actually ate it. And he got terrible, terrible food poisoning.
Oh, no.
I thought you said he put the can in a microwave.
Oh, no, he didn't microwave the can. That
it.
Also would have been very dangerous. No, he did take it out of the can. But but he got very, very sick. And this person managed
That's
to get...
That's very indirect to blame.
I know. It's a real clickbait headline. But this person did manage to get this story to Al in anticipation of like a show he was doing there. And Al's response was, first of all, I'm very sorry, and I certainly never intended for anybody to actually eat this stuff.
Which is funny because, Matt, literally as I was preparing for this episode, I had the thought of one of these days, we're going to be in the same area and maybe we should do an Instagram Live where we just eat every food that Al has ever referenced.
It would be really interesting because I have never in my life had Spam.
I've never done it.
Educate me. How many, name all the food. Is it like the Hungry Caterpillar?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, in terms of stuff we've talked about so far. Yeah, my Bologna. has Addicted to Spuds. That's an easy one. Potatoes. That's no problem at all. If we go forward in time,
lasagna.
We talked about lasagna.
We got to get something on a Rye or a Kaiser roll.
The Rye or the Kaiser.
Rocky Road ice cream.
Rocky Road ice cream. Thank you, Matt. You're going.
Yeah, that's just where we're at right now.
Exactly. See, a lot of these are easy. Like, it's like, oh, I have to go on Instagram Live and eat Rocky Road ice cream. That's no problem for me.
Yeah.
The Spam I think we talked about the bologna. I have not had that since I was a child, and I don't really feel like I want to. But I would for our listeners.
One slice of bologna, I think the same thing. We're not going to sit there and eat a whole can of Spam. We're just going to open it and take a bite. And
exactly.
Rate. That's what we should do. Yeah. We should rate the foods.
Ooh,
that could be fun. That's a fun side quest for us.
Is it a secret that the fruit that Matthew doesn't like? Have you ever talked about it?
You know, it's so funny.
You kept it off air.
It's so funny you're saying that, Olive. I have not talked about it on this show yet. And next week's episode, I'm going to have
Save it. You guys tune in.
I think I know what it is. And
tune
I think
in next week.
I might be on the same. I think we may agree on this.
Tune in next week for a.
Because we've been on tour together and we got a warning.
This is as much of a teaser for a future episode as we've ever done. Yes. When Wheatus goes on tour, you have something called a rider, which you give to venues, which is like a request for what you need technically and also like snacks for the green room and all that stuff for when you're there. And the Wheatus rider has a very specific, in all bold disclaimer that says absolutely no this product. And we are going to talk about it next week in conjunction with the biggest ball of twine in Minnesota. But it's a pretty tangential connection. So let's see if people can guess in advance. This is a great, thank you, Ala, for referencing that. It's funny, just before we started this, I thought to myself, like, oh, I'm going to have to actually come clean about something here. This is about to happen.
It's about time.
So it's coming.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass to Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
For this song, there's something he does in the lyrics to this song that I find really funny, which is that the singer of the song seems to have a really love-hate relationship with this product because they keep talking about how great it is, but then they are constantly saying things that are not great about it at all.
Like, okay, please quote.
So, you know, like one of those, like the sort of taglines at the end, like he will say, like, it's the best. He clearly eats it every meal of a day, really makes a darn good sandwich any way you slice it at all. But then he refers to it as mystery meat.
Carry a thermos to help wash it down.
Carry a thermos to wash it down. That does not imply that it's particularly delicious.
It's very caring.
Exactly. Something I never noticed before on the lyrics of the song until this time that I love is in one of the early choruses, he says, think about the stuff it's made from, wonder if it's mystery meat. And then later in the song, he says, to the second to last chorus, he says, think about the way it's processed. I wonder if it's some kind of meat. So within his own song, he has actually gone down a level for thinking, is it mystery meat? And now he is questioning whether it's meat at all. Now he has no idea what this actually is. This is just something. He has established that he uses it for, as you said, Matt, for spackle or bathroom grout.
Yeah, it's... Well, and then he also says, once you start, you can't put it down. Don't leave it sitting or it'll turn brown.
Or it'll turn brown.
Well, that's a warning for the locker.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the locker kid should have known that. You're right. You're exactly right. Some Al fan he was. Didn't even read the lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Think about addiction and wonder if I'm a junkie, let's eat.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that. Spam is the only thing he would eat from then on.
No, apparently it was
like a weird addiction.
It was a one and done. He didn't get addicted. He tried it and it almost killed him.
Yeah.
It almost killed him. My God.
Also, hold on a second. I want to go back to that story. Ballsy move in the world of I want to try this. Like, I'm not a very adventurous eater. I will be the first to say that.
Sure.
But I am certainly not an adventurous eater in the circumstance of taking it as my school lunch where I have no backup plan if I hate it.
Well, he loved Al so much, he just knew. He's like, there's no way I'm going to hate this.
Yeah, Al couldn't have
guided
me.
Al wouldn't steer me wrong. He loves this product, and so do I. You know,
he clearly didn't pay enough attention to the lyrics of this song at all.
He did not understand satire. This is also... shortly after this, I don't think at this point the numbers line up, but Al became vegetarian and has been vegetarian now for many, many years.
I was going to ask you about that.
Since this song?
This predates his vegetarianism, I think, but boy, this certainly makes you want to become a vegetarian. Some of the lyrics of this song are really not, do not make you want to eat Spam.
I love how the magic of Al is you can see... You can read it as it is.
Mm-hmm.
I really love the audience comments, participation.
Yeah.
It's like what it means to them.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's literal. Sometimes it's about the rhythm. Sometimes it's about the original song.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it is just about... I read something like a man said that he had a really bad fight with his wife after the honeymoon period ended. And then they decided to go see the film. And to see UHF.
Yeah.
And that's just like make the relationship better. They just sat there and crack up and laugh.
Oh, I love
that.
So
it's like kind of like their own nostalgic.
Yeah, yeah, totally. He, you know, and just to do like Al themes for a moment, this song covers a couple things that he loves to revisit. One of them is someone who is addicted to something that makes no sense. Like someone who is obsessed with something that does not warrant obsession at all. And even we just referenced addicted to spuds does a similar thing. Oddly, being addicted to potatoes makes way more sense to me than being addicted to Spam.
Well,
but it's this like unnatural obsession.
This is a weirder one than any of those, right? Because like I Love Rocky Road and Addicted to Spuds both are just, it's not even up to question. It is a person who is in love with this product so much that they have to sing about it.
Yeah. Even if we go away from food, it's like Velvet Elvis. Yeah. Or like there's all these things that
but
he
like
loves
you
to
said,
reference.
This
yeah.
one, it's like very mixed message. Like, very does he love messages. This? Or is it because I feel like, I mean, we're not going to get too crazy about this road that I'm about to take us down.
Oh, let's take it.
But isn't Spam sometimes also like looked at as like the food that you get when you're like kind of in a lower... income situation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
no,
is
it
more about like the trapping, like a person who theoretically through a certain lens, this is a song about a very poor person who's trying to convince himself that he loves Spam more than he does.
It is a cheaper.
Oh, that's definitely a point of view.
You, absolutely. It's a cheaper product. It has a really long shelf life, which is why people get it. You can sit in a cabinet for a really long time.
For years, I think. I think it's
years
a
and
long
years and years.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And it's funny, I just referenced it casually, but it actually does have a lot in common with Velvet Elvis in that that's another song about someone who is trying to justify an obsession with something that's kind of ruining their life. Right? Like, this is bad. Like, this person is admitting he has a problem. He describes himself as a junkie and an addict. Yeah, no, this is not good.
No,
this person needs help.
There's no world where it's a good thing to eat Spam as much as he's saying he eats Spam.
No. I'm looking at the cans.
Yeah.
25% less sodium. Come on.
Oh, man.
Or light, Spam light. Then why eat it?
I'm just looking as well now, all the different, I should have done this in advance, all the different varieties of spam. Yeah, you're right.
Chorizo, less sodium, hot and spicy, turkey.
Jalapeno, hickory smoked, teriyaki. There's quite a few different varieties here.
We're
yeah.
gonna really, if we ever do this food eating slash ranking, I truly believe that we're going to spend more time trying to decide what is the can of spam we're willing to even put in our mouths.
I mean, we might need to do a whole separate one just going down the spam varieties.
I think exactly one forkful of spam will be more than enough. I will absolutely need a thermos to help me watch it.
What if we try spam and love it so much that we become an addict like this guy?
This is dangerous. All right,
now.
So I'm about to tell a really weird story, and let me start this story by this warning. Church youth group in the late 90s and early 2000s was the wild west of weirdness.
Great.
So we used to do, it was actually really cool because it was not very religious at all, but we would do a Friday night coffee house on the first Friday of every single month. And it's kind of why my area had like a small local music scene for a couple of years, because it was like, if you were a guitarist or any type of musician who literally couldn't find like-minded musicians, the first Friday of every month, you could go and find every other musician within like a 10-mile radius, and like a lot of bands were formed.
The way you're describing.
Yeah, a lot of bands were formed from there. But we would do events to like make it something memorable. And the one...
What did you do?
We did a spam modeling contest where everybody was given a can of spam and a knife and toothpicks. And throughout the entirety of this 3-hour coffee house, they could take the can of spam, shave it however they wanted, and make little model statues. And then they would win like a gift card and like a year's worth of free drinks at the coffee house for the best model that they were able to carve. And
do you have photos?
No, this was literally like 20 years ago. But I do remember that the room that we held this coffee house in stank of spam for months afterwards. Like, you could not,
because there's a piece that is in the corner.
it's because I hate this. This is why I've never tried spam. It's like gooey. Like, yeah, when it comes out of the, because I think it's sitting in like a
wait,
water.
Matt, you never tried spam?
I never ever.
No,
tried
that's
it.
I haven't yeah. either, Olive. I've never had.
Wait,
it.
What?
I know. That's what
how
we're saying.
How many minutes in? You just discover this?
No, never, never, never. No. Backtrack slightly on the history of this, because I missed an obvious thing in terms of Al referencing it. The first reference I can find online of people who made fun of spam was, of course, Monty Python.
Yes, the spam,
who had,
spam,
who
spam
had the spam
song.
Bit in Holy Grail. And that makes total sense as an Al reference point, right? Like, of course he would have seen Monty Python, and he would have latched onto this as another like great funny thing. And you also, I checked, Matt, you're absolutely right, especially in the 50s and 60s, spam had a real reputation for being food for people in poverty.
Yeah.
That was the primary like marketing like attempt. Like, apparently they even in parts of the world they used to use the term called Spam Valley, which actually described areas where people were poor enough that they lived on spam. You could see it in the sales like numbers for the product. It's crazy. So in terms of the message of this person being obsessed with something that is in theory a bad marker for how they are is very. Another reference that I was going to make to like things that Al likes to talk about are these like really weird quirks of American culture.
Yeah.
And the idea of being obsessed with spam as this like the pride of eating this thing that you really have no business. Like, that's a very American approach, I think, to this, Al loves to talk about like the weird quirks and eccentricities of America. Yeah. And this is definitely meets that criteria as well.
And I feel like this we're podcast. Nearing 100 years of spam.
I think we are approaching 100 years of spam. Apparently, it continues to be very popular. They sell tons of it all the time. Again, despite the fact that I have never eaten it, Matt has never eaten it. I feel like if I took a poll,
This feels like,
oh, we got to put a poll
on a roller coaster. And then, like, I've gone through one round of the roller coaster, and now we're back to the same thing.
Yeah,
like,
there was no one in line, but then we're going so again. They just said, hey, we can go
what
a second
do you
time.
Think it's, what do you think it tastes like?
What do I think it tastes like?
Because I now have this taste in my mouth and my mind now.
I think it's going to taste like wet bologna.
You know what? I will say, in my mind, the best case scenario, and this is a very regional reference that I know you will appreciate, Matt, is in best case scenario, I would hope that it would taste something like pork roll.
Yes, I would say right? that. Like if pork roll,
which
and
is a
Scrapple
Philly, New Jersey,
just a thing.
Like yeah, common, like breakfast, like a pork roll, egg and cheese sandwich. But pork roll is also a, like a processed, like yeah, kind of like just brick of
not in love with it. Yeah, everybody I know. Look, I live with my family in general. They're all about Scrapple. They're all about pork roll. I am good to go on both of those. I've had them. It is
meat.
What it is.
You eat meat.
I do eat meat. But I've been really weaning myself off of red meats in general. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to wean myself mm-hmm. off of porks because pigs are very smart.
Yes.
So now it's just a lot of, I eat a lot of birds. I eat a lot of chicken. I eat eggs.
Yeah. Like, fish.
I wish I liked fish. I'm not the only seafood I like is New England clam chowder, which I feel like barely constitutes seafood. That's a soup.
Sea soup. I'm going to tell you that it's actually like it's not something I eat all the time. Maybe I ate it once in 2022. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ate Spam this year. But one way to try it really nicely is to eat a Spam masuba, which is a Japanese sushi type food that's raw with seaweed and spam.
I saw that. I saw that written somewhere. Like
it's kind of delicate. It's kind of like nice.
Apparently,
just don't eat a lot.
Apparently, that's also
much.
Something
don't
they do a
day.
Lot in Hawaii. Yeah. Like almost like a sushi roll version of spam with like rice and then the like grilled or fried spam in the middle of it.
I also think that my favorite sentence that's ever been uttered on this podcast is, "I haven't had spam this year." It's like, I want to clarify, I'm not an addict here.
Yeah, it's not, it's probably not healthy. But it's becoming like an icon food.
Yeah, no, it really is. Another thing to point out, because there's so many little things around this, and I want to make sure we mention everything. talk about a bad reputation for your product to have, that we literally named unwanted emails after this product.
Did you already look it up?
That's literally where it came from. That's where it came from. It came from
Seriously?
The idea of like, this is something that nobody wants.
Because it's mystery meat.
That they decided to call it spam. Like, holy cow. Like, imagine the people at Hormel must have been like, oof, that hurts.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they said oof, that hurts while they're counting the dollars that they've been making from Spam Valley every year.
Yes. And if we really want to get bold, apparently starting in 2019, seasonally, you can find at the store pumpkin spice spam. Now, I mean, like, come on. Like, now they're fucking with us, right? There's
so
just no way.
Here's my favorite thing about this, Matt. This episode is going to come out October 13th. Pumpkin spice spam is on the shelves.
Everybody, send us photos of you eating pumpkin spice spam. I gotta see it. I need someone to do it. I'm gonna see if I can find it. I'm gonna be out of the country, so I don't know what how much I'll be able to find. But
if I see it on the shelf,
I'll
be sure to text you a picture.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I think in Europe. So what's the spam?
Find it in Europe.
Apparently, it is also like in America, in the United Kingdom, it had a similar reputation. It is still popular. It's still sold.
I was gonna say Monty Python wrote a song about it. I guess it's available in the UK.
Hilariously, I'm actually skeptical. I feel like I'll definitely find spam. The thing that they don't have over there as much as pumpkin spice.
Yeah.
That's very American, so I don't know they're going to have pumpkin spice.
You're going to have
flavored.
To wait until next year for your pumpkin spice spam, Matt.
Brutal.
You got to plan your tours better.
Wow.
In the UK, they start celebrating Christmas in October.
They do, because they don't have a Thanksgiving like we do, so they just jump straight to Christmas.
Hey, I do that in my house, too, so that's totally acceptable.
in my eyes. Your decoration.
Yeah. I wanted to mention one more thing, another just spam reference really quick that I liked, which is no one knows the origin of the name exactly, or no one's sure what it means. The best guess I saw is that someone said it is short for shoulder of pork and ham, which is like the primary elements of it. Ooh, Matt just had a look of total disgust in his face when I said that. But a common, obviously not real, but people love to say the urban legend is that it actually stands for scientifically processed animal matter.
Did you also, so I'm going to, I feel like we're getting to the point where we do need to wrap things up and start doing our rankings. But I guess another hint to next week, do you know where the Spam Museum is?
Ooh, I think I saw it in my research here, but I don't know where it is. Tell me.
Minnesota.
In Minnesota. Wow.
Next to, arguably, the biggest ball of twine.
It's very close. Talk about a field trip for Al fans. You gotta make this pilgrimage. And then the only other thing, because we do have to rank it, the only other thing I wanted to reference is I immediately thought, I watched the REM video for Stand that I had not seen in a long time. Do you, either of you know this video or remember it at all?
Yes. People kind of hopping.
Exactly. Yeah. It's people.
And then I also seen a live one where they're singing in it.
Exactly.
The singer is like gesturing. Yeah.
Yes.
That's not the one with the B-52s, correct?
It's not the one with the B-52s. Okay. Yes. It's got this very awkward choreography that I think is intentionally sort of like, it seems like they're almost making fun of the very slick choreographed videos because it's these people standing on a compass and doing this like dance move thing, like, and then jumping around from north, south, east, west as the song goes on. But it opens with a spinning globe. Like the first shot of the video is a globe spinning. And I'm watching this and I thought to myself, like, man, this would have been such a perfect video parody for Al. Like, just switch the spinning globe with a spinning can of Spam and then have the people doing the dance moves like with Spam paraphernalia or dancing on top of like a can. And then I looked on YouTube and this very adorable looking family made it exactly the way I envisioned it. And there's this so cute, a whole family singing Spam. And doing the matching the choreography, but all wearing Spam t-shirts and stuff.
I love it.
Like wonderful. Baby Shark.
So good. So good.
I mean, we talked about this earlier that like the third official single released off this album was Isle Thing. And
it should have been this.
Huge mistake. It should have been Spam. I don't know what anybody was thinking.
I can't believe this wasn't a single. I get why they didn't make a video for it, because I think they were just totally tapped out on budget, as we established with UHF having not done as well as they hoped. But
this as a radio single would have been big.
I think as a single, it would have done better than maybe anything else on this record, honestly.
Yes.
And the fact that it remains like an Al fan favorite says a lot, because, you know, I remain fascinated to see how many Al fan favorites actually really are that way just because they're great. And like, there was no one helped, you know, no one helped make this a hit. It was just, a hit for his fans. This is just pure.
I'm going to take it to someplace a little dark.
Ooh, do it.
It's because I know Weird Al is ENTP. Matthew, I'm calling you Matthew and Matt.
Yes, that's fine.
Matt Kelly. That we're really into typing people's personality.
Yes.
So he's extroverted, intuitive, thinking, and perceiving.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they like to fuck with people, in a good way, in a wholesome way. And looking at the lyrics, I don't know if either of you have thought about that. I think he is actually talking about us.
Oh.
That we, you know, like the tin is there to keep the Spam in. The key is going to open the tin. It's probably some kind of knowledge or self-awareness.
Oh, wow.
And we are the Spam.
We're the Spam.
There's
a part
that.
Of me, man, I don't think Al has ever done a parody of his own parody, but I think that in 2023, especially knowing that the origins of the email thing came from this, I almost want him to rewrite this song about junk mail.
Yeah, right. I mean, you're right. It could be so meta. You're absolutely right. And again, I think like you said, Olive, in a loving way, I think he loves to draw attention to and point out people who have these weird quirks and eccentricities. Yeah. I think Al is someone who loves people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, like there's certain artists and filmmakers. I often equate it to filmmaking because I feel like it's very just direct and obvious. Where like. there's sometimes you watch someone's movie and you're like, oh, this person does not like people.
Yes.
Right.
Everything about it is very negative. And then there's people who make really weird, especially like oddball stuff that tends to highlight the weirdest subsets of the population in a way that is not judgmental, but just showing these bizarre, strange people that exist. I'm thinking of like John Waters or Harmony Korine.
Yeah, I would even put Wes
Harmony
Anderson
Korine sometimes
a bit
does
in
not
that
like
category.
People. Who was that?
I would put Wes Anderson in a similar category. He Wes really Anderson. Loves to highlight eccentric humans.
Yes, and
in a loving way, more
loving
so than Harmony
way,
Korine. Harmony Korine has a real edge to it.
Well, like, yeah, I would say kids might not love people too much, yeah. But like
John
yeah,
Waters had a great quote about. I always remember this quote where he said someone asked him. It was after the Hairspray musical had like become this national phenomenon and then it became a giant movie. And they said, like, you have the money and the acclaim. Like, you could be living in New York or LA. Why do you choose to stay in Baltimore? And he said, in New York and LA, it's a bunch of normal people that think that they're strange. But in Baltimore, it's a bunch of strange people that think they're normal. And
I love that.
And I think
love
that is like exactly what you get in any of his movies is like these people are so weird and they're so bizarre and they're so layered, but they are just living their life like it is the normal Monday through Friday thing.
And like, that's that's so true. And that's to pull it back, that's what I see in Al. I see someone who likes to show these types of people and likes to draw attention, but it never really feels like he's
like mocking or anything.
He's mocking them or belittling anybody. He is just
if you see his like caption in his on his Instagram and you know the way he thinks, he's actually very sweet and very organized.
Oh yes,
it's like he's not I don't think he's weird.
We're super late to talking about this at the time that this episode comes out, but obviously we're recording this episode for a little peek behind the window. We're recording this early August, literally 3 days ago Paul Rubens passed away.
Right.
Paul Rubens, another prime example of someone who, like Al, so clearly just like loved people. Like I have a friend who interviewed him for a documentary over a decade ago, and for the last 10 years has gotten a birthday phone call and a Christmas card because he's like, he just loved people. Like if he met you and he thought that you were a good person, he would try to just make sure that you felt loved and respected 2 days out of
that.
The year. Like, and it's like,
I love that.
That's wow. I see Al. I mean, we hear that from people. Like anybody who works with Al, the story is always like, he is always checking in on you after that. Like,
yeah.
So I'm waiting for my email, Al. We've like talked about you almost 100 times.
I mean, it's just a matter of time, right?
Yeah. It's
definitely. I'm going to be so excited when you guys finally get to ask all the questions.
Fingers crossed, man.
I see him as like a philosopher.
Yeah.
Like, in the future, they're going to reference Al like he is Aristotle or Plato, you know?
I mean, I've said it before that one of the most brilliant movie jokes of all time is History of the World Part One, where Mel Brooks plays a philosopher, but plays a philosopher as a stand-up comic. Like there's so much to digest from that at the time period, because he's right. The modern version of philosophers in the 70s, 80s and beyond is our stand-up comics. There's a real reason why like we get a better understanding of mental health issues through comedy than anywhere else.
Like, absolutely. And like what Matthew was saying about the watching a film, you know the director or the writer where they stand.
Oh yeah,
comedians too.
Yeah.
Oh yes,
some of them just
too.
Use this time to vent, and some of them really like
they want to connect with people.
Want to get people together.
I mean, that's
what
made like Bo Burnham
it, think,
stuff
right?
so hard to watch, right? Like Bo Burnham wants to connect so desperately that it almost fringes on like uncomfortable and creepy.
Uncomfortable, yeah. Yeah. But that's I hadn't thought of it. You just said it better than I did. Like someone who wants to connect with people or someone who wants to push people away.
Yes.
It's like very two different styles, and Al clearly is always trying to bring people in with what he talks about.
Well, Yeah. Matt, I think we're at the ranking point here.
Yes.
And I cannot believe that I'm about to say that I'm putting Spam so high on my list. Never did I expect this to be a top 10 song, let alone just shy of my top five. I put it at number six between Like a Surgeon and This Song Is Just Six Words Long.
I love it. And you know what? I'm going to put it not quite that high, but also higher than I expected at the top of this show. I love this. And as we also said, this is a great, it's just a fun, it's a classic Al parody. Everything about it feels just very quintessentially him. The REM song is so good. We didn't even talk about the end of this song that has like two modulations, two key changes up. Like, it just is so celebratory.
Yeah.
And to do that about Spam also just makes it all the more fun and satisfying to me. I am putting Spam on my list in between, just below I Think I'm a Clone Now, and just above another song we referenced, the Rye or the Kaiser, right. Another food song. But I do like this better than that. I think this is really, I'm a huge fan of this one. And really also, this is a real nostalgia one for me, because as we talked about, I heard this early on with the food album and it captured my imagination about Spam. Not so much that I ever tried Spam.
Yeah, but
but it did capture.
Are you ranking within just the album? No, across.
We're ranking the parodies, so songs where he's actually specifically parodying another song, and then his original songs, we do those separately. So this is just ranked against songs where he parodied other songs. Yes.
I see.
Yes.
Wow.
Now, Olive, I sent you an email, which was
let
two,
me check my email.
Yeah, which was two screenshots of our guest rankings. Melanie is our number one song, and then all the way at the bottom, Money for Nothing / Beverly Hillbillies asterisk is our bottom song. And what we need you to do is tell us, amongst this list of songs, where would you put Spam in relation to them?
Wow, that's such a big job.
And I love
it's going to get a little bit more complicated after that. But
by your own admission, I know you're not that much of you don't know that much about Al.
I don't know everything.
And that is totally,
but it's
totally fine.
Went from I know nothing to I don't know everything.
By all means.
So I got education.
By all means, judge this song against songs you have no idea what they are.
Yeah.
And just go for it.
Okay. It's going to be, I'm looking at the two screenshots, right?
Yep.
Two pictures.
Yes.
Ooh, okay. I feel like we had a lot of fun talking about
it.
And it's like an endless topic. We haven't even like talked too much about what I meant. Is it seems like a door that opens to more possibilities.
It certainly
I'm gonna put it right before Hot Rocks Polka.
All right, that is weirdly where I just dropped it.
I know, I love that.
Yeah!
So yeah, there we go.
Perfect.
So it's between Like a Surgeon and Hot Rocks Polka. All right, so here's a much more difficult thing for
oh my
your
God.
Circumstance.
Yes.
Looking at that list, with the songs that you do recognize from that list that we've covered, you can take any song that you think is either too high or too low and move it to a different spot on the list.
Wow. Well, the last one was from last week, right?
Yeah, not Money for
week.
Nothing.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, last week. I feel like... Wait, do I have to take it out of the whole thing?
No, you just can move it somewhere else.
So you can take something and move it to the top. You can take something and move it to the
bottom. Oh, I would eat it to the top.
All right.
Eat it above Melanie, yeah.
There we go. All right. Easy peasy. Well, Olive, thank you so much. Clearly, we went an hour and 5 minutes talking about Spam, which is hilarious because I don't think we're going to go an hour and five talking about the 7 minute long Biggest Ball of Twine in Minnesota next
week. What a great conversation. Thank you so much, Olive, for joining us.
I love being here. Thanks for the tour.
Is there anything
God,
you want
so
to
fun.
Promote real quick before we fully sign off? Is there anywhere people can go to see what you're up to?
So I am Pineapple O on all platforms. Pineapple O. I'm in a band called Late Cambrian. The bass player is Matthew Milligan.
Oh my God.
Never heard of him.
And your previous guest, John Flaszewski. And
yes.
We're a five piece. We play shows all the time and we're popping. Well, this one is not so much of a advertising because we're going to play one of our bandmates' hometown.
Yeah.
Soon. It's going to be great.
That will have happened Yes. Before this episode comes out. But, you know, when this episode does come out, we'll see. If I'll tell Matt if we have something on the calendar and we can add it to the description and whatnot, and make sure people know about it.
Amazing.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. I'm an actor, musician. Thank you for Matthew saying that I'm a dancer. I guess I will be then.
I mean, I've seen you do, I've seen you do what I would describe as dance, like, right? Or like
performance art
type stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. To me, you are incredibly brilliant and talented. I've seen you do so many things, and they're always amazing.
Thank you.
You're just incredible. So
thank you, both of you. This is so much fun. I'm going to start a podcast and have you guys on.
Thank you so much for doing it. Really, like, what a treat. This was great.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.